Let's call a meeting of February 16th, 2012, of the Jobs and Economic Development and Finance Committee to order. And we want to get the minutes. I'd like to have someone move the minutes of February 14th. Representative Mahoney moves the minutes of February 14th. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carry. Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Okay, first up we have Representative Fabian's bill, which is 2095. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We're going to deal only with Section 6 of this bill. It's the only one pertaining to this committee. And the rest of it will be addressed in other committees. It goes to, what committee does this go to after this? Ways and Means. So anyway, I will move House File 2095 to pass and be sent to Ways and Means. Representative Fabian, you want to describe Section 6 of your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to be here today to present House File 2095. As many of you know, last year we did a permitting bill, House File 1, that's designed to speed up the permitting process and streamline things. I commend Governor Dayton for last night mentioning that we want to continue moving forward with the streamlining process. I agree with the governor that jobs and economic development has to be our number one priority in this legislative session. We need to continue to make Minnesota more competitive. We need to continue to allow for businesses to grow and expand. I have the great honor of representing a part of the state that has some wonderful companies, almost all of which have been started by individuals who were born and raised there. And I've seen their businesses expand over the years, and they've expanded outside of Minnesota. And part of the reason for that expansion outside of the state is because of is permitting is one of the issues. It's not the only one. There's no silver bullets. But we do need to try to put some more tools in the toolbox for our Minnesota companies so that they can grow and expand here. We also need to make sure that we're taking care of our cities and counties. Many of those entities are involved in expansions of different facilities that need permitting. And it's my goal to see if we can't help them through this process, and all the while not lowering environmental standards. Section 6 deals with developing through the Department of Employment and Economic Development a environmental permits coordinator. We've worked quite closely with the agencies and the administration trying to come up with language that works in this area. And what I'd like to do at this time is turn the mic over to Tony Quillis and have him go through there and explain exactly what we're trying to accomplish.
Okay, I think we have a little bit of problem. Section 6 in the engrossment that was passed out is different than Section 6 is in the engrossment. Which is the right one? Yeah, we're talking about Section 10 in the bill in our desk. Is that right?
Page 7.
I think,
Mr. Chair,
do you have a copy of that engrossment? Yeah. Okay. House File 2095, first engrossment on the top. We're in the second engrossment. Okay. Okay, work off the other one. Then this is section what that we're going to...
Section 10
is in the second in the first engrossment. Environmental permitting coordinator, permits and coordinator, it says on... Section 10.
What page are we?
Page 7. Now I think we're up to speed.
Mr. Chair, if I might, the logging industry in my part of the state appreciates all this paperwork.
Those are the recyclers.
Chairman, if I may, I'm Tony Kulis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. When Representative Fabian references Section 6, he's talking about the first engrossment. When we're talking about Section 10, that's the bill is introduced. It's the same language. We didn't change anything down in the Environment Committee when it was heard there. We just kind of rearranged things, so I can still, it's still relevant to how it plays, Mr. Chairman.
So, word for word the same, Section 10 and Section 6.
We just changed the definitions of the project and put them after and into 116J035 to make them apply specifically to the environmental permit coordinator.
Very well. All members understand? Okay. Go ahead and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, as I said, I'm Tony Kulis from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. This provision is part of the permit streamlining bill, which is continued and based off the success that we had last year in a bipartisan fashion with the legislature and the Dayton administration. And one of those provisions in the proposal this year is creating an environmental permits coordinator. If you'll remember, the governor, along with Commissioner Landwehr at the DNR, Commissioner Austin at the PCA, Commissioner Sertich at IRRRB, and Commissioner Phillips at DEED, toured northern Minnesota a number of economic development projects last fall. And after they were done touring, they had a press conference, and the governor created a mining permit coordinator and a mining sub-cabinet within his administration. And we think that's a great idea, and we thank the governor for creating that. We think that's going to help a lot of those economic development projects up north and move through the permitting system. But, Mr. Chairman, we think that also that there should be that permit coordinator should be available to other industries in the state, forestry, energy, and green enterprise areas, manufacturing, and agribusinesses also in the state would probably like to have a permit coordinator. So that's what we did. We kind of built off a mining permit coordinator, called it an environmental permits coordinator, set some ideas for them to work on providing coordination and understanding of local governmental units and the various resources that they use to permit in the state of Minnesota, make some recommendations as they're going through to do this to try and find some efficiency in the programs. But again, this is an option for a project proposer in the state. Not all folks that are creating economic development projects in the state have to use this. This is just an option, and we see it either as a management or as an assistant to project developers in the state. This will be paid for by the project proposer. When the project proposer decides to go down this route to try and use an environmental permit coordinator, there will be contact with DEED and the commissioner there to negotiate a project reasonable cost for the project, negotiate a schedule. So it will be paid for, the costs that will be incurred for by the agency will be paid for by the project proposer. Mr. Chairman, I also wanted to throw in that we've been working with the agency very closely. Commissioner Phillips and his staff, specifically Tom Dicklich and Paul Moe and Kari Howe, have been great to work with, and we've been, if you will, rowing the boat in the same way. The governor has also created a program called Minnesota Business First Stop, and we're going to meet next week. There's an affiliate of the chamber called Grow Minnesota. And Commissioner Phillips and Grow Minnesota, the gentleman that runs that for us, is some of you old-timers will remember, Bill Blazer, that used to lobby down here for the chamber. Mr. Blazer, Mr. Phillips, myself, Kari Howe, and we're all going to talk about how we can coordinate this together. One of the issues that we've been talking about is changing the environmental permits coordinator. We might want to call it Minnesota Business First Stop Permits Coordinator or Business Permit Coordinator. So we're working with them to try and find some areas that would, you know, that's just one example where we wanted to go through. But we've been working with the agency, and it's been great to work with them because we're all moving in the same direction, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Anyone has any questions, raise your hand. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Chair Gunther and Mr. Quillis, Representative Fabian. In environment, we talked about two issues, and I'm scrambling quickly to find them in the bill since I was slightly late. Mm-hmm. And I sensed in listening to you, one of them you remember what they are. We were talking about, I sensed that you were going to do some revising on those two areas, and I don't see an amendment here.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gunther, the two issue areas that Representative Dill is referencing is Section 2 of the bill, and which aren't, I could prepare to talk about them, but Section 2 of the bill, and then again on line page 4, 4.30 to 4.35, deal with the interruption or suspension of government services. Representative Dill asked us to tighten the language there, and we're going to work with him to try and tighten that down. And then, as I mentioned, the environmental permits coordinator language, we're still working with Deed to try and find that. And Representative Dill, I pledge to you that once we reach those agreements, you will have that amendment.
All right. And rather than, Mr. Chair, rather than elaborate on what we're working towards, I'm just going to let it go at that then.
Right. Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. And Representative Fabian, who pays for this? And where is it in where is it in my copy? I don't know which copy you've got. So,
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, thank you. If you turn to page 7, line 7.16, it starts there.
Well,
item C.
Not in ours.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, in the bill as introduced that you have, you don't have it. I apologize, I misspoke. There was a provision put in that allows the project proposer with in a negotiation. Once the project proposer decides to access and work with an environmental permits coordinator, indeed, the project proposer will pay for all the costs incurred by that person at Deed.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
So is there a cost to Deed in this bill, Representative Fabian? Are we talking another full-time employee equivalent? Is it a part-time? And who's paying for it?
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, it's our intention that the fees collected for this would cover the cost of the to the agency. If they need to hire an additional person, we're having discussions with the agency at this time to kind of iron through all that to make sure that we do get it right in the end. Mr. Quillis, do you have any comments?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, the original fiscal note put forth by Deed was $100,000, and that's why in negotiations with them and some talking with them, we agreed that that was not the intent, was for them to pay for it, that the project proposer should pay for any costs incurred by the agency.
So a couple of questions here then. So if Deed would have to find someone to do this coordination, and then in the event that a company decides to get a permit and go into the negotiations with Deed, then they would, the cost of that employee would be spread out amongst all of the, it would kind of like be back charged to that permit request. Is that what you're saying? Because otherwise we have to come up with the $100,000 ahead of time and then have Deed put the money back into the general fund. That's the way I'm understanding this.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Quillis.
Representative Mahoney, the way that we envision it would be in coordination with Minnesota Business First Stop. I've been teasing Ms. Howe. I've been titling her the environmental permits coordinator. I'm not sure that it's going to be her task, but I've been teasing her about that. But the way it would envision, as I said, if you have a project, you're a canola crushing plant in northern Minnesota, and you decide to go this way, you would call Minnesota Business First Stop or Commissioner Phillips and his employees and say, I think I'd like to use an environmental permits coordinator for my project. I would like someone in the state agencies to tell me if I've got all the permits I need, and I'm making sure that I've got everything I need to start forward on my project. And you would go in and then meet with Deed and say, they would say, here's the permits that we think that you need. We think we can coordinate all the public meetings, and here's what we think the cost would be for the employee that would be doing that for your project. We would then negotiate and figure out what that is, agree on a number, and then the project proposer would reimburse Deed for that cost.
Where's the money?
Is Carrie Howell, I think that's who you said it was, and is she here? Mr. Chair, could I ask that she come down and explain what she does and if she does this? Because she's apparently got the, she's been given the title and given the responsibilities. I don't know if she's already doing it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, I've also titled her the general doer of all good.
Excuse me.
Ms. Howe, can you straighten this all out for, since you know everything?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the committee. My name is Kari Howe, and I'm the Executive Director for Minnesota Business First Stop, and I am housed at Deed, and I've been a Deed employee for many years. What the Minnesota Business First Stop is a model that the foundation is built on the Green Enterprise Assistance Statute, which was passed by the legislature a few years ago, and then also has built on the legislation and the governor's executive order that was passed for the MPCA and the DNR to provide 150 days maximum or less for permitting. And so Minnesota Business First Stop builds on that, and it's a multi-agency collaboration between the DNR, the MPCA, Department of Commerce, MnDOT, IRRRB, Department of Agriculture, with Deed as the lead agency. And so we meet with businesses as they are going through the process of developing businesses that need multiple state resources from our agencies in order to help advance that business through the state resources. And talked to a business yesterday here at the Capitol, and he and his company are going to be visiting with us and the Minnesota Business First Stop team in March. And he said to me yesterday, I'm gonna have a list of 16 permits. And I'm going to get that list to you before our meeting, so then I will get it in turn to the MPCA and the DNR, and that's how we coordinate and operate and optimize the regulatory efficiencies through Minnesota Business First Step.
Mr.
More question?
Sure. So, Representative Fabian, what does your bill do that she's not already doing now?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, it would be more specific towards the environmental permit arena.
Is that the correct answer, Representative Fabian?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Mahoney, yes it is. This bill is dealing with environmental permitting.
So, Mr. Chair, Ms. Howell, that's what you're going to be doing?
Our committee, staff committee, works towards that goal already.
Okay. I always like to make sure paper's being used at the Capitol. Mr. Chair, I have one other question, seeing so I think the bill is already being done in law now, but if this bill passes, Representative Fabian, and not you, you understand that Representative Downey has a bill to eliminate Deed? Did you know that? Just nod yes. Yeah. So I'm going to envision, and I won't help you on this answer, but my guess is if this bill moves forward, or even if it doesn't, seeing as how we've got somebody doing this already, you'll be voting against Representative Downey's bill that eliminates the Department of Deed. And that's an answer you can give. I won't even help you there.
Very well. I don't think there's any question there.
Oh yeah, I just wanted to know how he's going to vote, which is inappropriate and out of bounds on the rules. But I thought maybe he is a freshman. I might be able to fool him.
You got my support, Representative Dill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, Representative Fabian. Now I'm listening to all this, and I'm now wanting to make sure I get it. When a project proposer comes forward with an authorized or an acceptable professional or whatever we're calling them here in the bill, and they bring forward a draft permit and an application, and they're going to pay a fee. What happens if the amount of staff time at any of the agencies or cumulatively exceeds the amount of the fee? In the mining industry, and Mr. Quillis, you can tell me if I'm wrong, the mining industry just simply pays for the costs of the reviews and all of that stuff regardless of what it is. The creation of draft permits, all of the staff time, everything. What will happen if the fee that is charged is less than the amount that the state expends to do the proper work to get to the end point where a permit is actually issued?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. members okay. of the committee.
Well, yeah. Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative
Fabian.
The bill is a work in progress, and if there needs to be some changes made within the language that will guarantee that the costs are covered, obviously that's something that I'm willing to take a look at. Would bring it more in line with possibly what the mining is doing. That's why they're having the negotiations set up in advance to do these things, so that they can lay it out, and hopefully there's enough information available to be able to get those figures accurate.
Representative Dill.
Okay, so I think what I heard you say is that the idea of this is to ultimately recoup the cost, and there's going to be a mechanism in this at some point that you're working on presently. So at some point there must going to have to be a fiscal note on this to make sure that that's actually going to happen, and I assume that'll be before it gets to the Finance Committee or sooner. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Swedinski.
Chair Gunther, Representative Fabian. Is there kind of an estimate? Obviously, there's not a fiscal note with this, but just on average, what kind of participation that you're going to potentially have with this as this moves forward? And you know, kind of as we talked a little bit about FTEs and some of those things. Has there been some interest? Obviously, maybe this could be directed towards the chamber, but in sector areas or business areas, where do you feel it might lead to?
Mr. Quillett.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Swedinski, we haven't even got to the governor's desk yet. We have people approaching Ms. Howe for the job to try and go through and coordinate some of those permits. I think in the fiscal note that the agency put together, we anticipated somewhere between, 5 and 10 people being able to access this coordinator, we hope, in the first year.
Mr. Chair.
Are you done? Representative Mahoney.
So, Ms. Howe, if you're already, are you already doing this?
In a different manner than is being presented.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Howe.
Ms. Howe, how many FTEs do you have right now that you are working, that are working for you or with you?
In terms of people?
Yes, on permitting and first stop business.
I am the person working full-time in that arena, and each agency has a dedicated staff to
that staff person or
time person maybe to staff the team, and then behind them are the technical people who do the work. So the staff person, for example, from the MPCA, he coordinates the permits within the MPCA that need to go through the technical people who actually work on the permits. And then he communicates back to me and then to the company how things are going, and vice versa, back and forth to the company. Does that make sense?
I think it does. And I think, Mr. Chair, again, I think...
So really there's only one person dedicated to it full-time, and that's me. But there's lots of people working with me to make sure these things are done.
I have another, just a little vein, and I'll be done. Are there other states that do this?
Not to the same degree that we know of that we're doing it. There's a lot of one-stop portals, but not one-stop collaborations. And we're promoting... when we do our rollout, which we haven't done a major rollout yet, that we want to get in front of the project so that we're helping businesses on the front end, even with technical assistance, which we have done with a couple of businesses who may need a permit of, think they come in needing another a certain type of permit and find out that with their business plan, they wouldn't need that type of permit. They could use another one that would require less application process. So there's a technical assistance component to it as well.
Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
Representative Fabian, I think a question you might want to ask the department is, and I don't want to, I'm going to be done here, but I think you need to find out how many, if other states are doing something similar, how many employees they have. Because we seem to think one employee can do multiple jobs with multiple days of the week, and you can say that, but I know too many state employees that are working 50, 55, 60 hours a week at, and only getting paid for 40, which, you know, it's a little inappropriate. But I'll just leave it at that, and I hope you have a conversation with Ms. Hall.
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Chair Gunther. Okay, so I'm still making sure I'm getting it, because I want to support the bill, because I want to see things happen. I want to make sure I get it. So you are the point person, but these FTEs, they would already be working on these projects because they work in the agencies that handle those things.
Right.
But because we're trying to make it more efficient and get more action sooner, so that really there's more time to review, practical time to review that during that 150-day period. Because I've heard in other committees that they're pressed, number one, to give an opinion in 30 days, and then after the opinion to particularly get a permit done in 150. We're going to just, this is basically a move to try and be more efficient.
Correct.
And it's not going to be to add new FTEs out into the DNR and the PCA and the environmental and the alphabet of agencies. And so really the only FTE that's going to be added is you.
The FTE that's existing is me. The FTE that would be added would be within this, would have to be within this bill. We'd have to add another FTE somehow.
And Ms. Chairman? And that would be to assist you then?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So I kind of get that now, because these people are scattered around there working on issues already, and it would come to the DNR for their review, and what you're trying to do is get them to the exact right person and do it as quickly as possible and make sure that they're engaged as soon as possible.
Right, and if it involves the DNR and the MPCA, which oftentimes it does together, they're sitting in the room together with the business, just on the front end of what the business is, when they're talking about their business plan and what their business needs. So then they're talking to the alphabet soup all at the same time.
Thank you.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to reiterate, you know, what Ms. Howe is saying here, that we believe that in addressing some of the other concerns that have been expressed, that by bringing people together and creating efficiencies, we're going to create fewer people hours by having people in the same room and by having somebody who's an expert. And if we can incorporate some of the other aspects of the bill in there, we think that we can free up more agency time by doing some of those other things as well.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, this is the first time I've seen this bill. Are we going to have hear from the opposition to this bill?
That we're just going in one section. If there's opposition pertaining to Section 6, we will. That's the only section.
Well,
the section having deed have this person is just part of the bill.
That
it's
only
the only part that pertains to this committee.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I.
It's already gone.
Except the word environmental is in there, and I guess I'm trying to understand Deed's expertise in terms of environmental protection. Could you talk about that, please?
Ms. Howell.
Thank you. We are not a regulatory agency, as you are aware, and when it would come to that, and when it does come to that, I do consult and refer to the regulatory agencies, the MPCA technical expertise and the DNR expertise.
Okay, well, what I see here in the summary that we have for our committee, it does talk about this person that could be, that the bill allows there to be a new process where an applicant can hire a permit application professional to write their own permit instead of applying for a permit, and the PCA writing the permit. So you're, if I understand, you could work with somebody who is not a PCA employee, but some environmental professional person hired by the industry that wants to locate in a certain area.
From that other, the other section of the bill? You're referring to
you
that?
Tell me. I'm trying to understand the whole bill.
Yeah, Representative Clark, this has already gone through Environment Committee.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I'm not on the Environment Committee this year, so I'm trying to understand the PCA, the deed person's relationship to environmental protection, though, is what I'm trying to understand. So it's
this is a coordinating position only.
I understand that. I'm trying to ask what kind of resources this person has at her disposal. And if I read the bill right, it looks like, in the interest of speeding things up, industry can hire its own permit person and work with you. Is that correct?
And the PC and the PCA, they would work with the PCA and our department and myself. That's the piece that the business, I believe, if what you're asking, would have the opportunity to hire, if they so chose to. And then the deed coordinator, yes, would work with that person or those people along with the MPCA.
And. The time is speeded up to do that amount of work, right? By the
that's the intent, I believe, of the bill that's been proposed.
If I understand, the PCA would have 30 days. You, as a person coordinating all these folks, including this new person who writes their own permit for the industry, is still within that 30 days?
I would refer that to probably the MPCA and what the intent is of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Clark, we're talking about two different sections of the bill. Section 6 would be an option for a project proposer involving somebody that would coordinate environmental permits and the hearings and what would be needed. Representative Clark, I think, is referencing Section 4, which is another section of the bill that references a permit applicant professional, which is another option that we have put together in a different section of the bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Clark,
you've never been a person who said we can't ask questions that are relevant to a whole bill. This is a whole bill, okay? And I mean, don't try to tell me I can't talk about it. I'm trying to understand her job in the part of bill that we're looking at. What are the resources that she has to deal with in terms of issues of environmental protection? And Representative Fabian, are you concerned at all that there's some watering down of her ability, the ability of this new coordinator, to be able to understand or call forth the kind of resources they need in terms of environmental protection? It's called the Environmental Permits Coordinator. And although I heard our industry person talking about changing the name so it doesn't include environment anymore, but basically that's what they do, whether we call them that or not. So do you have any concerns about that? Because it seems to me like, I mean, there's a place in here where again, not in the same section, but it's the line before the section that says, except as prohibited by federal law, construction and reconstruction and replacement modification, you can start a facility before you even have an issuance of a permit by the agency.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clark, if you remember from House File 1, we did something similar with regards. Well, all we're doing in that section is allowing a project to begin. So a proposer, whether it's a business or it's a city, a county that's doing a project, what we're doing is we are allowing them to start construction, them knowing full well that they do not have their permit in hand to discharge. You can do the construction, but you can't do any discharging until you have the permit in your hand. With the short construction season that we have, particularly in northwestern Minnesota, what we're saying to project proposers, and again, whether it's a business or it's a county or a city, you can go ahead and start your construction, but you cannot do any discharging until you have your permit in hand. So do I have concerns about the environmental standards? I think I'm getting your question correct. No, I think that we have people both in the business community and in our communities in general who do care about the environment and who do want what's best. And I believe that for me personally, living in northwest Minnesota and raising my children there, I have great concern for the environment. But I do believe that businesses and counties want the very best people that they can get to put their permits together. The last thing that you should want as a business is to have a permit that's done poorly, an application, excuse me, only to have it tied up someplace in a bureaucratic snag of some sort or wind up in court because you've done a poor job of putting your data together on your application. What we are trying to do is put some more tools in the drawer that allow projects to move forward, as Commissioner Austin said last year, at the speed of commerce. And I have great confidence in the people of Minnesota and the people that they choose to hire to advance their projects in an environmentally sound way.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Clark.
You know, I have great confidence in the people of Minnesota, too, and they haven't tried to rush things through when there's been a question. And I'm trying to understand how this would work. I can tell you, in my own district, there was a agency of government who, if they had been allowed to go ahead and start construction of a project without a permit, they would have wasted taxpayers' dollars, because the permit was very, they didn't think they even needed a permit. And they needed to go through a process at the PCA where it turned out they did need a permit. They denied it for a number of, this was under the previous administration, they denied it, they didn't need any permit. Well, there was a serious air pollution problem and they needed a permit. So they, you know, if they had been allowed to go ahead and start construction, they would have wasted dollars. That happened to be a public agency. But I could see that could happen too with a private agency. Maybe it's a private agency that we want to have deed help incentivize. We want them to do a, you know, we want them to get started. But it seems to me, I mean, at least I have a question why we would allow, you know, something that may be a potential air polluter to start construction until we have a permit, especially, I just don't, in the name of speeding up, I don't quite understand it. And it sounds like our new coordinator in this position would maybe not have all the resources that would be needed. And so I'm really trying to figure out how this really works to the advantage of other people in Minnesota who trust us to look at these bills carefully as well and not just rush them through.
Representative Clark, I think they have, she would have the resources of the MPCA, the DNR, and any other permitting agency in the state while she's coordinating it. She is not doing this on her own. She is trying to do things in an expeditious way so we can get the permits passed appropriately with all environmental considerations included. Well, we're not trying to short-step or shortchange any environmental process whatsoever.
Well, Mr. Chairman, can I say one more thing to you?
Certainly. I'd love it.
I mean, you and I both care about the environment, and neither one of us sit on the Environment Committee, so this is a chance for us to kind of figure this out a little bit. And if I'm reading the summary right, and I'm trying to put the two together, the PCA would have just 30 days to review an application, and the pressure's on to move this through. And the permit, the law would allow the permit not even to be the PCA's people looking at it. It could be this private contractor hired by the industry. I just don't see how that helps us. It seems like we're really taking tools away from the person that we're asking to do a job. Do you see that? I'm sorry, and I didn't get your full name again.
Mr. Quillis. Oh, Ms. House.
Do you see that? What I'm saying in terms of some resources that you have that would be quite different from what you would have right now from the PCA, for example?
If I'm understanding your question correctly, the environmental permits coordinator role from our office would work with the
permit applicant
professional who's hired by the business, and that's a private person, private company, and also with the MPCA to expedite permits for the business. With the permits coordinator role, that would have to be an additional person in order to expedite that coordination because of time.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that last part again, Mr. Chairman? What would have to be an additional person?
In order to, the environmental permits coordinator, we have to look at how to make that happen within our department or whatever in order to allow that time to move forward with those 30 days. That would be an additional person.
Mr. Chairman, you mean beyond yourself?
Yes.
And so there's another FTE involved in? Is that what was being said earlier?
With this, we'd have to look at that. And that is a discussion that we're having inside the department.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, is there a job description of what kind of expertise those people have? Do they have to have any environmental scientific credentials?
We're not that far yet because of the bill. We're not that far yet.
Mr. Chairman, are we ready to hear this bill?
I am.
I'll yield the floor to my colleague.
Representative Lemire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian. What Section 6 does, all businesses don't have to use this one-stop shop to use it, correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lemire, that's correct, yes. These are options. Both of these sections that we're talking about now are options that are available to proposers. And again, I want to emphasize that these are options that are available not just to businesses, but they're also available to cities and counties to use them as well. The people who would be permit applicant professionals need, there's some qualifications that we list here in the bill. They're engineers. They answer to a state board. They can't be involved in unethical behavior and so forth. They have to make sure that they're adhering to the highest standards that their profession demands. Why would an engineer who's involved in a highly technical project, number one, take on the project in the first place, and why would he want to risk having his license jerked because he's done a poor job putting this application together? To me, it seems to me that when we can bring experts into the field, that I think the permit applicant professional is going to be, it's going to be someone who knows their stuff, someone who knows how to put together a permit application and submit it. And then once it's submitted, it still has to go through all of the review, all of the public comment periods, and in the end, the MPCA or the DNR has to either grant the permit or reject it. So the safeguards are still built into the system as best I can, as I see it.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. Mr. Chair? So it's also fair to say for businesses that, let's say, they didn't know they needed a permit, that'd be a great opportunity to call there, and then they could tell them exactly which permits that they need, correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lemire, that's a great point and goes back to what Representative Clark was talking about. Possibly that situation could have been avoided. That if this program were in place when the construction started on the project that she's referring to.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I heard you say, Representative Fabian, that you could grant or deny a permit. So we're not assuming 100% granting of the permit, which seems to put a little bit of burden on the one-stop shop or the coordinator, because somebody has already commenced construction, as in lines 617 through 619. So they're building a facility. Mm-hmm. They're assuming they're going to get a permit. Well, if they don't get a permit, then they lose the money they've got in their facility. And I'm assuming that this coordinator has got that burden in the back of their mind. Oh, these poor people are going to lose their money. We better make this permit work. I think there's an inherent granting of a permit before we're even into the process if we allow them to construct it. I just think that the coordinator at that point and the other FTE has got this train wreck rolling down behind them, and there's going to be pressure on them to make sure that that permit gets granted because they've expended maybe $50,000 in a facility. I don't know that the state wants to take that liability on based upon a environmental permits coordinator. I think that's a lot of liability in that one person because there's going to be a lawsuit if somebody doesn't get a permit and they've spent their life savings on a facility. How would you answer that?
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Representative Fabian.
You know, my answer to that is that when you get involved in a highly technical project like that, you need to have the best people available. And when they go to the project, the coordinator at DEED, I think I've heard Ms. Howe say that those responsibilities for the permit are going to be handed off to the appropriate people in MPCA and the DNR. It's not going to be handled by them. Those technical people handle that. This is simply a coordinator's position to make sure that we get to the right places so that we get the correct information put into the application and so that we can proceed forward. But yeah, there is a little bit of risk involved, but that is something that I think that people, that's a decision that they need to make for themselves. And if they're not confident in that, I would encourage them not to start. But we're creating an option for someone.
Representative Scalzi, and then Representative Dill.
We're not creating an option for them to start. We're giving them the right to start in this provision. We're giving them the right to start. And there's no language in here that says if you start construction before a permit, you're on your own. There should be some kind of a legal document or legal language that protects the state, because we're giving them the right to construct a facility, and then we're going to say, well, maybe you don't get a permit. We better be darn sure that the state isn't left on the hook to pay this person back for rights that we've given them, granted them, without legal ramifications on the state taxpayer. I don't see any clause, and this environmental permits coordinator is going to have to understand that. There's got to have to be legal documents somehow, because if we give somebody a permit, and they've got to get a permit from their local government to start a building, but it's all on the subject of, it's all based upon whether or not this environmental permits coordinator is going to see it through and make sure that they, in fact, might have to lose their money. And that coordinator's involved. There's got to be legal documents in here somehow.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Scalzi, the provision that we're referencing on allowing construction to commence, is based on House File 1 and Governor's executive order last year that allowed construction to begin at wastewater or at facilities that require water permits. Mm-hmm. And the key here is except is prohibited by federal law. And so if it is prohibited by federal law, it is completely at the risk to the project proposer to begin construction of that. Right now under state law, you're allowed to begin what's called grubbing or pouring concrete, but you're not allowed, we're trying to clarify, that you could begin construction. If you would do that, that is at the risk of the proposer, right as you described. You'd better be sure, because if you're not and you don't get that permit, your financial institution probably won't let you get there in the first place, but it is completely at risk to the project proposer to go down that route. And this is just saying, except as prohibited by federal law, and if your banker allows you to do it, because of our short construction season, that you would be allowed to commence construction, but not discharge or emit. It is completely at risk of the project proposer.
So you're saying it's completely at risk. I wonder, is there a permit application that says you're completely at risk and the state is not? That's my concern, is I don't want the state to get stuck with something here.
Mr.
I hear you say that, but I don't see your application, or I don't understand language in here that states that.
Seeing nobody's responding to that, Representative Dill.
I heard it referenced that a private project proposer, also under the same bill, a public entity, could be treated the same way. They could be building a wastewater treatment plant. And let me give you an example in Orr, Minnesota. I mean, we knew we had to have a wastewater treatment plant, and so we just knew it. It's imminent. I mean, doesn't it seem kind of right that it's imminent that you need a wastewater treatment plant for a community? And we know that we can construct from about June 15th, when the frost is out of the ground, until maybe December 1st. If we waited to get a permit for a wastewater treatment plant that everybody in the state ultimately gets by complying with the regulations and modifying their design in some ways so that you can get it, and then we waited till we got the permit, we could be 3 years before anybody could go to the bathroom in our town. And so that wouldn't be a good thing. And so the idea of this, of the language, is to allow for the city, if possible, a city that was a proposer, if possible, to go ahead and start some of the construction based on the designs that come forward from professional engineers that know about these things. And if we called up the one-stop number, I don't see how there could be any pressure or very little pressure on the coordinator, because it would be the folks that issued water permits in the case of a wastewater treatment person, which or agency, which would be the DNR. It would be them that would have the pressure on them if there was any pressure at all, and they're backed up by laws and rules, and they can't break those. So I don't see any. I don't see the pressure personally, and I'm just that's how I think about it. I mean, somebody has to get off the dime and get something done if you're going to have a Minnesota construction season north of Highway 2. And, I mean, this happened the same thing with Esser Steel in northern Minnesota. I mean, the project proposer came along, and I can quote the owner. He says, we are going to build the plant with our own funds. And there you go. Now, as it ends up, they went and got financing, but at that point, they were willing to build the project with their own funds, and they wanted to get moving. And short of House File 1, they couldn't, because they could do some work, but not the kind of work they needed to get done. And so, I mean, that's the essence, I think, of the bill. And I'm not trying to defend the bill, but I just hear this discussion. Remember, I serve on environment, and I listen to all this going around the table as well, and I'm starting to understand what the bill does. Not fully, but I don't see the pressure on this fine lady here, that she's just the person that's going to direct traffic, as I understand it.
Hiring somebody else to help. Thank you. Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I think part of the pressure that I'm seeing in this bill, and you do have to look at the whole bill, is that there's a 30-day time to review the application, and if it's not done by then, it is automatically approved. Correct? A PCA.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative Clark,
go ahead. I would like to hear from the author of the bill as well.
Sure, and I'll do it very briefly. If a project proposer, again, it's an option, but if a project proposer decides to go down the permit application or professional route, the engineer must have be licensed by the state of Minnesota and have at least 10 years experience in the subject matter, whether it be air, land, or water. He would then let the PCA know that the project proposer would let the PCA know that they wanted to go that route. Within 60 days prior to submitting an application, then within 30 days, the PCA would let this permit application professional know what would be required of them to put together the draft permit and the project specifications, and then they would submit it. Then, Mr. Chairman, all public hearings, all public comment periods must still be adhered to, and when that is finally over, comments and questions are compiled and responded to. Then from that moment, the PCA has 30 days to decide whether the application is and draft permit are complete or not. If that is not, and then they have to let the project proposer know within 30 days, citing the appropriate statutes. If that is denied or approved, either the project proposer or any individual citizen that feels aggrieved can go to the courts and seek redress, Mr. Chairman, and all final approval still rests with the PCA. We have not taken any authority away from them. We've not taken away any public comment periods or hearings. It's just when those are over and all the comments and questions are compiled, then they have 30 days to deem the draft permit complete or not complete.
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to understand the approval with a 30-day limit comes prior to the public having a chance to weigh in, isn't it? Am I reading that right?
Final approval rests with the Department of MPCA.
Mr. Chairman, and maybe I should ask Ms. Howe, do you see any problem with a 30-day limit without the prior? If I'm understanding this, and tell me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me like this doesn't allow all of the public input or questions to be raised by people prior to a decision that someone in the position that we're creating here would make, right? That could all move forward without that, and then because it's a 30-day limit. And then I don't quite understand what's being stated about going back and having more time. Do you understand that? Maybe you could clarify for me.
I'm still learning Bill as well. The MPCA, have they testified here? Because they would be, I believe, be able to better answer those questions relative to their portion of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, can we hear from them how they would work with this person indeed? Because I'm really confused.
We have two more bills, Representative Clark. I'd like to get this one solved. It's going to go to Ways and Means and the floor. You'll have adequate time to ask those. Representative Scalzi asked a great question also. We could probably meet tonight. I'm all for that.
I'm okay with that, too.
Yeah, I don't live here, but I'm all for it. I'll just remember when bonding time.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think you want to say that so loud.
A good
message. I feel uncomfortable without knowing some of the answers to some of these questions, Mr. Chairman, and if you'd rather us not discuss it, then that's your prerogative.
We'll get somebody from PCA here if that's what you want. Kirk Delka, are you ready to answer some questions? For Representative Clark, I'm sure you heard him.
Chair, committee members, my name is Kirk Adelk. I'm the legislative director for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. There was some questions dealing with the permit application professional and the 30 days. We do have some concerns with it. The way we read it, we would have to, within the 30 days of receiving the application and the draft permit, give a thumbs up or down on a permit. We would not be allowed at that point, if we thought there was any part of the application or permit, draft permit given to us, we would have to say no or allow EPA to come in, and they would be the ones to say no, because our delegated authority from the federal government is from Chicago EPA. We carry it out, but EPA reviews our permits. If they find out that we're not doing something, they don't believe we're doing something correct, they have the power to come in and deny permits. This does not allow us to get a permit that may be 80% correct, it needs some tweaks, and that we have to give it a thumbs up and down. We can't work to a yes.
Okay. Did that answer your question, Representative?
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else have a question? Seeing none, I remove my motion to have House File 2095 to pass and be re-referred to Ways and Means. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion carries. Next on our agenda, we have, which one? 2050?
Yep.
House File 2050. Representative Barrett. Representative Barrett doesn't appear. Yeah, here he comes. I'm running down the hall.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 2050.
Very well.
To be referred to taxes.
Going to taxes. Representative Barrett.
Very good. Thank you, Mr.
Love
Chair.
To hear your bill.
The committee. Sorry about that. You know, I sat here for a few minutes and thought, well, I'm going to meet with a constituent quick and be right back, and you guys get done. It's normally the way it works. But
you can leave more often.
Good point.
I'm here to talk about and discuss and hopefully approve House File 2050. It proposes a law for the city of Taylor's Falls to be added to the list of border zones in the state of Minnesota. The state legislature with the governor a few years ago created border zone designation that allows for special taxing powers and allows for a specified amount of money, in this case not to exceed $100,000, to attract business from outside the state of Minnesota. The word border zone is critical because the other cities involved in this, at least at one time or another, were Breckenridge, East Grand Forks, and a few other cities on the western side of Minnesota that had competition right across the border from South Dakota and, I believe, North Dakota. And so in this case, Taylor's Falls, a city that I represent in Chisago County, is right on the border of Wisconsin. And right across that border, not more than 100 feet away, is the city of St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin. And right down the road is Osceola, Wisconsin. And so we compete unfavorably with both of those cities for jobs, for business, for economic development, for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is our high property tax rates in our state compared to Wisconsin, 100 feet away. 17 of the 21 industries in the Osceola Industrial Park are from Minnesota. And so what this bill does is levels the playing field, creates economic opportunity, and provides jobs for my county, Chisago County, and Taylor's Falls.
Okay. Any questions? No questions. Hearing no questions, I will renew my motion to Carol's motion, excuse me, to renew her motion to have House File 2050 pass and be referred to taxes. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Very well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Thank you. Next, we have Representative Sanders with House File 2093. I believe Mr. Swedinski wants to, you don't want to do this. Who wants to move this bill?
Yeah,
oh, he can move it himself.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move House File 2093, be recommended to pass and be sent to the Committee on Commerce.
Very well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 2093 addresses issues resulting from the independent contractor exemption certificate program legislation that left kind of a major loophole allowing for worker misclassification. This bill, House File 2093, replaces the ICEC with a pilot contractor registration program. But let me be clear from the outset on something here. Registration requirement applies only to workers and companies that are not already licensed or otherwise registered with DALI. In other words, if you are a worker or a company that is operating above board, complying with DALI, DEED, Department of Revenue, you have nothing to worry about. This bill doesn't require you to do anything additional than to keep complying. A little bit of background. In 2007, the Office of the Legislative Auditor released a report titled The Misclassification of Employees as Independent Contractors. So clearly this is not a new initiative. We've been working on this issue for several years, and hopefully we'll be able to bring about some resolution with this bill. The OLA found that misclassification of employees as independent contractors is a problem in Minnesota, and that state government needs to establish a coordinated response. It also found that using independent contractors instead of employees can significantly reduce in employers' organization or labor costs, which is a good thing in many cases, a tool that we obviously want in the toolbox. However, when employees or employers are misclassifying and especially intentionally misclassifying workers and employees as independent contractors, the misclassified workers are denied benefits and protections that should be available to them. This report estimated that 14% or 1 in 7 employers had misclassified at least one worker on their team in 2005. This estimate is also believed to be extremely conservative because it excludes employers that fail to register with the unemployment system. Also, because of limits in state law, the agency's efforts to stop this were noted as being very limited to modest and not very well coordinated. They recommended kind of a global approach, working with Department of Revenue, DEED, DALI, working with the legislature to make sure that we standardize the criteria in state law and rule that determine worker status. What we've done in this bill is address a lot of the findings and the recommendations in the OLA report. We believe that we have a good product. What this bill does is it creates a pilot program effective July 1st of 2012, ends on June 30th of 2014, with a report coming to the legislature on January 1st of 2014. Requires registration online, but again, for those only not already registered. It maintains the long-standing nine-factor test retained to establish independent contractor status for workers. The application process in this bill is much better. It's much more simple. There is no fee charge for anyone to enroll or register during this pilot program. Provides for penalties and for failures to register, for hiring unregistered contractors, and for coercing others to form a business entity. However, the penalty for failing to register will be forgiven if registration is achieved within 30 days. So again, members, the focus of this bill, the intent of this bill, is to make sure that we understand who a lot of these contractors are, that they are correctly registering and in compliance. The ICEC, along with the 2% withholding, ended up driving more people underground. And as noted again by the OLA, that employee misclassification is a problem in Minnesota. With House File 2093, we want to make sure that we maintain safety in the construction industry, that we ensure worker comp insurance premiums are being paid, unemployment insurance is being paid, the taxes are being paid both from employment side as well as the income side, and that fair and appropriate wages are paid. With that, we think that this is a good bill, a good bipartisan approach to address this loophole, and we ask for your support.
Thank you. Would you like to have your A1 amendment passed at on page 7, line 8?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'll move the A1. It is a technical amendment, just a misspelled word, if you will.
Very well.
Changes employee to employer, vice versa, whichever way it goes.
Any questions about the A1 amendment? All in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment passes. Now, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Sanders, my understanding is you've worked with a whole bunch of people and come to pretty much consensus. Can you kind of give us a heads up as to who's supporting this bill and if there is any opposition?
Representative Sanders.
Mr. Chair, I certainly can try and walk down that path with you. We have spent quite a bit of time, certainly spent a lot of time with the Department of Labor and Industry working on this. I guess I don't know, Mr. Chair, if you'd prefer to have some folks come down. I don't want to necessarily put words in people's mouths. I believe that if you ask the builders, we're moving in the right direction, that this is something that's better than what currently exists. I believe that ABC is also somewhat on board with this. I was not aware of any opposition until about 3 a.m. this morning. I got an email from... find it here for you real quick. From the Minnesota Association of Exterior Specialists, it's the only group I've heard from, and again, not until about 3 a.m. this morning that hit my email inbox. But outside of that, I have not heard of any other opposition.
Mr. Chair.
President Mahoney.
From visits to my office to meetings over the summer to conversations in the hallway, this is a pretty consensus bill. This has been a program we've been trying to get our arms around, and the department has kind of gotten it down to a pilot program on a small number. I think it's a good way to see if we can get the kinks out and come to a conclusion for a long-range problem. So I hope we pass this bill out and get it to wherever it needs to go.
Very well. Any other members have anything to say about questions? I'd like to, do you have any testifiers?
I have Mr. Durenberger here from...
Durenberger, you have anything you'd like to put in?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Charlie Durenberger with the Department of Labor and Industry. I just wanted to make myself available in case any members had questions for the department.
Well, at this time I would ask anybody to have any objections to this bill to please feel free to come up and testify and let us know what your objections are.
Thank you, Chairman
Gunther. Welcome to the committee.
Give
your name for the record, please.
Jim Dvorak. I'm Chairman of the Minnesota Association of Exterior Specialists. And we have talked about this. We just came aware of this yesterday afternoon. We don't really have our fingers on the pulse of everything that goes on in this legislature, but we did want to pose some questions and or opinion in regard. And I did send out an email late last night to many of the members on the committee. Shane has a few thoughts. Shane is our membership director of the organization. We're a small organization of independent contractors, and we organized just 4 years ago, and it was to have some sort of a say here at the Capitol, and we are here to represent our opinion on this bill.
We'd love to hear it.
Okay.
I think you need to get up and let him have the mic.
Yep, sure.
My name is Shane Paulson with the Minnesota Association of Exterior Specialists. We have several overall concerns with the bill, the way it's written. Primarily, the application process of the ICEC itself is a great concern. Their disclosure requirements about the companies the independent contractors will be working with opens the door for unwarranted and unnecessary audits. We're also concerned that this bill is not friendly to a small business owner in Minnesota. We're already overregulated the way it is, and we don't want to see more small business owners relocate out of state and create another net loss of jobs because of this. There's other ways that this can be accomplished without having to hold the general contractor to comply with some of these mandates. Yes.
My name is Chris Barrett with the Minnesota Association of Exterior Specialists as well. I'm the vice chair. A couple other things that we had concerns about were, according to the bill, the way it's written out, we cannot control the quality of the work. The quality is put upon the subcontractor and the timeliness of the job, meaning they can show up whenever they want to and do whatever kind of a quality work they want to, and we have no control over that, or they automatically become an employee of ours, which I'm sure you can see that would hurt the homeowner or the end user most of all. We seem to have lost the page. Sorry about that. The other thing was not going beyond the quality and not being able to control the subcontractor, we also felt that the bill also requires the subcontractors to buy and pay for the materials, which there is no subcontractor out there that has the capital or the credit lines to provide material to the job site or the project, which could lead to delays in the timing of the job. It could lead to lien issues for the homeowner or the business owner. It could lead to all kinds of other issues with you when you have a subcontractor having to be bought, paid for materials.
Okay. With that, we'll see if the author can answer your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you guys for coming down. I guess I'm a little confused by a few of the comments. This bill does hold fast the long-standing nine-factor test. It's retained in this bill. Nothing has changed in this bill regarding that. So a lot of your comments regarding not being able to maintain the holding control over the job. We're not changing the nine-factor test. We're adopting statute as is. So there is no change there to that on that issue. As far as the small business issue is concerned, I don't think anyone's more concerned with small, medium-sized businesses than I am. I know that that's a major concern of this committee. This pilot program, again, we've gone out of our way to make sure that the only people we're affecting are people that are not currently registered. If you're a general contractor, subcontractor, worker, or company, you're already registered with the Department of Labor and Industry, this bill does not affect you. You do not have to re-register. What we are asking for is those folks that are not currently registered to register with us. There is no fee for you to be registered. And what we're asking is that all contractors, independent contractors, subcontractors, workers, and companies be operating under the exact same rules, ensuring a level playing field.
Which we understand. We just don't would you give your name for the Army? Would you address the microphone up?
Sure. We didn't want to be held liable or be onerous of information that the subcontractors belongs to them and is between you and they. And really, our qualification levels we felt were substantial already for the subcontractors. We make sure they have insurance, and we feel as though someone other than us should be monitoring their behaviors with taxing and employment obligations, paying their employees, making sure they do withholdings and make the proper forms out, etc. It shouldn't be something that we have to monitor. We believe it becomes an onerous cost or task for us. And it also opens the door possibility for auditing upline to those who are paying those subcontractors, and we don't want to have that exposure either.
And again, it'll just raise costs to the consumer is what's going to end up happening.
Okay. Representative Sanders.
I guess I go back again. We've done a great deal of simplifying in this bill, mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, and this registration is going to be done online. It's going to be a link off of the current website, being able to check and have updated records from the Department of Labor and Industry, DEED, as well as the Department of Revenue are going to be almost instantaneous or as fast as your internet service provide allows. So again, we believe that this, in fact, is greatly simplifying things in this bill, and do not see, unless you can point out some specific language, we'd be happy to take a look at it, but don't see anything that proves to be onerous or that would heap additional costs onto the system that those already operating fairly and above board and registering and complying with Department of Labor, Industry, DEED, and Department of Revenue are not already doing.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sanders, and to the testifiers, I'm delighted that you 3 or 4 years ago decided to get together, and that in such a short period of time you learned how to get here, which is better than many other organizations. And it's good that you got here at this particular committee hearing, because this has got at least one more, if not two more, committee hearings. Typically what happens when an issue comes up, particularly if it came up 12 hours ago with the author, we like to move things forward and allow and instruct the author to work with you between now and the next committee so that your issues can be addressed. But having said that, and I would hope that we'll do that, but what I will say to the author's bill, this literally has been something that we've been doing for the last 4 years. He's actually making it simpler. So you may have been in non-compliance for the last 4 years. He's just trying to make your life a little simpler in a pilot program. So I would suggest that you work with the author and the department to figure out where your concerns are and if they can be addressed.
Yeah, we're interested in that. We would be in favor of that, yes. We're not opposed to the bill as it's written for the most part, but there are some lines in here. I'm not sure how to read this, but it's line number 3, 4, and 5. Where it, maybe you can tell me.
Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers, we've got 5 minutes left to this committee, and I would hope that the chair would allow us to move this bill forward and then have you sit down or other testifiers come up if they wanted to, and you sit down with the department and the author and find common ground.
Okay, sure, we would be more happy to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I
very well.
What I was saying or no? No?
Okay. Anybody else would like to testify against the bill? Thanks for coming, guys. I appreciate that.
Make sure you get Sanders' phone number.
I think it's published.
Hi, could you give your name for the record?
My name is Gus Hansen. I come from a company named Window Light that won the Minnesota Business Ethics Award Small Business category in 2001. It died of big overhead in 2003, and my partner and I and a bunch of independent contractors worked to see that none of the 100 outstanding jobs that the customers were hurt and that they were all finished and completed. We worked with the Department of Labor and Industry on that. Our customers called us Loyal, and that is our official name, Loyal Home Improvement. We continue to service the window light customers, 60,000 windows that they sold, for instance. We do that out of goodwill. As far as somebody having a good reputation, we basically walk on water. We have no employees. No employees. Everybody's an independent contractor. That's the way our business works. It works well in an industry like construction, and especially it's seasonal. Apparently, a lot of the people that do government projects and big ones have never heard of putting hay on the ground to keep it from thawing so that they can start digging before June 15th, from hearing about the other previous testimony. My problem is that the government seems to be making a lot of legislation and laws without actually talking to anybody who really does the work. When I confronted some people on federal stimulus money through the Department of Energy, Department of Labor and Industry, that gave it to BAM about the way that that money was administered, they said, I said, did you even talk to anybody in the industry about this window rebate? Did you even talk? Yeah, we talked to Marvin and Anderson. I said, your industry, your organization is called Builders Association of Minnesota, Builders Association, not Manufacturers Association of Minnesota, ma'am. Now, you all have, emails of all of the contractors in the state. But I heard about this thing when I logged on this, when I got back from dropping my kid off this morning, and I logged on to my email, and I got a notification from NARI, maybe one of these other gentlemen, about this bill. And this whole independent contracting thing has done nothing but drive things underground, nothing. And, people that comply for bills, when I go and get a permit, do you know what I get? I get a guy that used to take pictures that wants to come out and stop my whole roofing crew or my whole siding crew and inspect each side of the house because he wants to justify his job. But in the meanwhile, there's record sales for do-it-yourselfers who should not be doing it yourself from all the box stores and all the rest of it. And what you guys need to do is start tracking where the materials come from and say, you buy over $500 worth of building materials, we want to know where it's going. You say it's going to a cabin in Wisconsin, we're going to give you the address and send it to the municipality there, and now that guy knows to where to go and look. That's a 100% accurate way of finding out. People don't go and cut down trees and make their own materials. They don't dig up the stuff for concrete. It has to come from somewhere. But you know what? Us micro businesses, of which there are many of, we don't have a union lobby for my lefty liberal buddies, right? So they're co-opted. I get nothing from them. Okay, all I get is regulations, and I get people that want to side with giant firms and construction companies. The EPA comes after us, and every single one of my workers who's starving and is underemployed and taking a pay cut and doesn't even show up on your statistics because they're independent contractors. You know what? Employee is a legal term, and so is independent contractor. And how we know someone's an independent contractor is they get a 1099. Have you thought about tracking 1099s? Because I heard when they said that we're not going to tax these benefits that the Wall Street guys who caused this economic mess because we can't go over a special category of business. How come you guys are just going after the independent contractors in the construction industry? Why aren't you going after everybody who gets a 1099? All the people that clean bedpans and work for the big box stores and clean their parking lots and their aisles and all the rest of it, because that's where I think a bunch of the illegals
are. Sir, would you get a specific question?
I got a specific question. Why are you sitting here trying to get people who follow rules to be more responsible and bear more burden? We follow rules in the first place.
We'll get an answer to that question then if you'll be quiet.
Okay, let's get one.
Mr. Chair, and sir, again, if you're following the rules, this bill literally does not affect you at all.
You know what? There's all sorts
of... Excuse me, sir, just a minute. We go through the chair. If you already are a worker or a company that is licensed and otherwise registered with the Department of Labor and Industry, you're covered. This is good. You don't have to register again. You're already registered. This bill is precisely going after the subs of subs who are not being 1099. That's the problem. We do follow the 1099s. The problem is that according to the Independent Office of Legislative Auditor,
There is a lot of folks that are being misclassified as employees. We do not know who they are. It is leading to unsafe work conditions. It's leading to folks not paying workers' comp insurance, unemployment insurance. They're not paying taxes on the employment or on the income side of things. All we're saying is if you have not registered, you need to register. There's no fee to register. It's an online process. It's a very simple process. If you've already registered, this is a much simpler way to register. So the next time you have to do it, you'll be pleased that it's a simpler process. But again, if you are already a good actor, you've got nothing to worry about, and this bill does not affect you.
Of course, here's the problem with the initial legislation is that it makes an assumption. And it really seems to me to be some veiled attempt to try to get illegal workers. And I don't mean people that are not paying taxes at all, but people that are not United States citizens. And somebody in their mind has an idea that there's a whole bunch of those out there. Well, you know what? My Mexican roofing crew are citizens, okay? And we 1099 them. And do you know why we 1099 them? Because we would have to pay the taxes on that money. We can't. Where do you think? That's like in a 30% tax bracket for me. Now, these guys, maybe they don't work full year round. It would be cheaper for them. There's no way. Nobody's saving any money by paying somebody and not 1099-ing them and telling you who they are. You get a copy. You know who they are. You know, this whole idea that they're not insured properly if they're not a general contractor. Well, we get audited every year. So
sir,
do something about our business.
I think you have complied with every law, like the author of the bill says, you have no problem.
Here's my problem with what is happening here. It's not helping any of the problems. All it does is create extra paperwork and drive more things underground. That's my problem. My problem is I drive down the street and I see no permit. Homeowner putting lead dust all over his neighbor's lawn because he bought his stuff from a do-it-yourself store. Da-da-da-da-da. All the way down there. I'm like one of the only people. You got your 14%. I don't know where you got this number from. But of people that don't register for anything and don't do stuff. Where'd you go out to a house and find them? Where's the find them that you guys promised? Somebody like me who hires them, and if they get a guy there, if there was some guy they had that had something lapse or didn't fill out a certificate, and if you think a website, I've developed software to run our company at a low cost. User-definable, friendly, big-picture icons, easy. I've been doing it for 8 years, and if you think it's easy to get a construction worker to get on a computer or get on the Internet to do anything but buy hockey tickets, you're wrong. They... Their whole modus operandi is to get away from a computer.
Sir, I tell you what we'll do. If you have problems, we don't have time to solve them right now, but we have Mr. Durnberger from the Department of Labor and Industry. He'll certainly hear all of your problems and tell you if they're solvable, how you can solve them. And we can certainly, the author would certainly be very willing to talk to you, but right now we are past our time.
I understand.
And Representative Sanders, would you like to renew your motion?
I would, Mr. Chair. Renew my motion that House File 2093 as amended be recommended pass and be sent to the Commerce Committee.
Okay, all in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you very much for coming. You have his offer and Mr. Durnberger's offer to try to address your problems. Thank you. With that, we're adjourned.